I'm Farai Chidea.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And what if you were told you had to go raise $75 billion, Farai? Could you do it?
No.
You could probably get a good $2-3 billion. I know.
You've got a lot of dollars.
You should see her Twitter feed, that's for sure. The Federal Reserve yesterday released the long-awaited and much-leaked results of the so-called stress tests, which found that 10 of the nation's 19 largest banks need a total of about $75 billion in new capital to withstand losses if the recession worsens. The banks in trouble have until June 8th to come up with a plan and have it approved. Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner made the announcement yesterday. The markets reacted in after hours positively. Futures are up this morning. It appears the market likes what they saw yesterday. Edmund Andrews joins us, the New York Times economics reporter from Washington, D.C. Edmund, explain to me how much of this is mandatory and how much of this is voluntary. There's this June 8th deadline, but do the banks have to do something specific?
Well, what they have to do by June 8th is come up with a plan to raise that capital that the regulators approve. And they have technically 6 months to actually get that capital together. But for practical purposes, I think, most people assume that the banks are going to move very, very quickly because, to the extent that they are perceived as, not being able to meet the mandate, they're going to have investors doing a run on their stock.
I mean, they hate being in this situation, but let's distinguish between the regulatory environment that covers things like the so-called mark-to-market rule, which has a specific requirement for how you calculate an asset, and therefore you have to put up a certain amount of reserves, capital reserves, to cover the eventuality of some asset not being valuable. What is the difference between something like the mark-to-market rule, which governs the amount of reserves a bank is supposed to have, and this stress test, which says that banks have to have a certain amount of reserves?
Well, I guess there are a couple of ways in which this is different. The first thing is that they're using the word capital, which is different from money.
Uh-huh.
In most cases, the banks aren't going to necessarily – they're not going to have to actually get any additional cash. What they're going to try to do, what many of them are going to try to do, is convert shares, preferred shares that investors already hold that are dividend-paying into, some form of common stock. So it's kind of shifting one kind of paper into another kind of paper. And they can do that if they want, although they don't want to, by converting the preferred shares that the government owns, that the government received when it gave these banks money last year through the federal bailout fund.
Right, sure. Yeah, I remember.
Right. So they can convert that those shares into common stock.
Basically give the government a lot of stock.
Yeah,
right.
And they would be giving the government a big, significant voting stake in their company. They don't want to do that, so they're going to try to do that on the private side. And the surprise, actually, the one real surprise in the last couple of days has been that they really argue, for the most part, that they can meet these requirements without actually tapping the Treasury for more money, either by converting their paper or actually getting cash.
So they've got a Rolodex they're going to rely on. They're going to call up their angels and get some angel financing. Let's talk about the individual banks in just a moment. But Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner yesterday announcing this had a particular hope, and this is what he said, and it puzzles me a little bit, and I'd like your reaction.
Our hope is that with these actions today, banks are going to be able to get back to the business of banking.
Get back to the business of banking? What were they doing, Edmund?
I think as opposed to the business they've been in for the last 6 months or so or 9 months of convincing the public that they weren't going bankrupt. I, too, kind of reacted to that because it has this – the statement had this feel of, kind of getting back to business as usual. Let's just get all this unpleasantness behind us and just get back to normal. And the question is whether they really are going to be back to normal. Those losses are still there.
Right.
And and the economy isn't fixed yet.
Well, who's on the top of the heap and who's on the bottom of the heap? Let's do some names before we go.
Are you meaning in terms of who owns the most?
In terms of the stress test, in terms of who passed, who's particularly healthy, and who the government would view as not.
Well, the ones that needed the most money, of course, were Citigroup, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, and GMAC, the automotive financing arm automotive financing arm of General Motors. Citigroup is already committed to converting, you know, $45 billion worth of government preferred into common, so they only have a remaining $5.5 billion to get from some other source.
Edmund, I just wanted to jump in and ask something quickly before we go to the headlines, which is that we spoke with Elizabeth Warren, who's running the oversight panel that deals with TARP and with where the money's going. Will there be, you think, any further regulations that the government might pursue if the government infuses this kind of capital to the banks?
Well, there's going to be tougher regulation regardless of whether these banks go to the government for more capital. But if they do, the Treasury and the Fed have kind of made it clear or strongly hinted that, you know, they'd look at management changes at those institutions.
So maybe a changing of the guard, certainly a changing of the regulatory environment, regardless of the results of the stress test. Edmund Andrews, New York Times economics reporter, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.